This is Digital Story Podcast number 1032, December 30th, 2025. Today's theme is the Irish Coffee Incident. I'm Derek Story. We had a tremendous opportunity this holiday season to gather family members from all over to meet at my brother-in-law's house on Christmas Day. To help with the festivities, we all contributed to the event. My job? To set up and run an Irish coffee bar after the meal. I took my job seriously, but one can't foresee every ramification. And that's what led to a near historical disaster. I'll explain all in the first story of today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. This was quite an opportunity this year to have family members from up in the Seattle area, from out in Colorado, from all over the place, generations. We had little kids. I mean, we had everything, 18 people in all related. And it was really super enjoyable. And we knew that we wanted to do this right. And my brother-in-law and his wife coordinated everything. They set everything up. They prepared the core meal. And then they asked us to contribute bits and bobs, to round out the event. And they really hosted, Pat and Sue really hosted a wonderful, wonderful time. I mean, it was memorable. And I was so happy that we were able to go. Everyone got a job, right? I mean, that's the way these things work. That's the way you make them work. Everyone had a job. And I had a super fun one. I mean, this was so right up my alley. My job was to set up an Irish coffee bar so that we could have Irish coffees after the meal. And I was going, man, this is great, right? Of all the assignments that were handed out, boy, this one seemed to be at the top of the list for me. So, of course, we had to do a little research beforehand, and we had to do a little bit of testing, because just like with photography, on the spot is not the time to figure it out. You figure it out beforehand. So I had my boys up at the house the night before. They both came up from San Francisco, and they're staying at the house. And I decided, okay, let's do a test of the different formulas for the Irish coffee. My research leading up to this had led me to, I knew what ingredients I wanted. Obviously, I'm going to go with Irish whiskey, and my choice is Jameson's. Had that ready to go. But in terms of the, kind of the other part of it, I opted for Bailey's as the secondary ingredient, and then, of course, some coffee, 6 ounces of coffee on top of that. Since I live in the Bay Area, we all know the place to go for Irish coffee in San Francisco is the Buena Vista. And in fact, both of my boys had been there in recent history. And so they had, a good top drawer Irish coffee, top of mind. So anyway, I went ahead and I put together my mix, and I used the recipe off the Bailey's website, which logically would be pretty heavy on the Bailey's, 2 ounces of Bailey's, 1 ounce of Irish whiskey, and 6 ounces of coffee. That was the starting point recipe. So I made a batch of those up, and we all tasted it, Teresa, Mac, Zach, and myself. And I thought they were pretty good. Teresa thought they were pretty good. Max and Zach thought they might have been a tad too sweet, or, a little too much Bailey's forward instead of the coffee and whiskey forward. Now, as we continued talking about this, I discovered that this is, everyone has their own personal taste on these things. And I think Zach, who liked the coffee whiskey flavor forward, might have been a bit in the minority, because fast forward to the event itself, almost everyone wanted Bailey's forward in their coffee when we asked them about it. So at any rate, though, I did try a second blending that had a little less Bailey's, a little bit more Irish whiskey, and a little bit more coffee forward. And it was good, and it was definitely whiskey and coffee forward, but it just wasn't Irish coffee enough for us. So I went ahead and went with the starting recipe. Having thoroughly tested this, and we had a lot of fun testing it, I was very confident in my ability to make pleasing Irish coffees for the entire gang on Christmas Day. The next morning comes along, which is Christmas Day itself, and I'm getting all my ingredients together. I had 2 bottles of Jameson, 2 bottles of Bailey's, of course, you know, my shot glass to measure things, you know, all the little goodies that I thought I would need. We've got Pete's coffee, French roast, so nice and dark and bold to go ahead and complement the sweetness of the Bailey's. I was really focused on getting all of this stuff together. I had it together in the box. Plus, I had a gift for Pat and Sue, so that went in the box. And then, of course, there's all the, you know, getting everyone else ready. Teresa was preparing some things, of course, for the event. She's always does a really good job with that. So we get everything together, and we get in the car, and we head over to the event. And boy, it was great. And I didn't have to do anything at first because the Irish coffee wasn't until after the meal. So all I had to do was check to make sure, you know, the coffee maker was in good order, that we had enough mugs, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I took care of that pretty fast and then just set everything aside and enjoyed myself. And boy, did I. I got to talk to practically everyone. The young boys were having a lot of fun. You know, it was just one of those warm holiday gatherings that just really make the holidays worthwhile, in all honesty. So we're rolling along with this, and it's going really well. Enjoyed the meal, and I enjoyed visiting with everyone, and it was time for me to be on. Go over, and I'm lining up the mugs. We're brewing the coffee. I'm pulling out all the ingredients, and just looked pretty cool, actually. I had a nice little bar set up there. Had whipped cream, of course, for those who wanted it. And I didn't automatically put whipped cream on the drinks because what we would do is we did a raise of hands of how many people wanted an Irish coffee, and almost all the hands went up. I would make the coffees, and then Teresa would deliver them, and then she'd have the whipped cream in her hand. And if they wanted a dollop of whipped cream, then we could just add that on the spot. So there is some additional control over to how sweet it was. And it went great, and everyone seemed to enjoy their Irish coffees. And I'm kind of, you know, a sigh of relief because I feel like the whole thing came off pretty well. We're all kind of, you know, chatting with each other and standing around. I'm sort of cleaning up the bar a little bit. I planned on making a few more. Maybe someone would want seconds or something like that. And Teresa comes up to me and she says, "So we should probably do the picture before anyone leaves. We want to make sure we get everyone in the shot. I mean, this is a huge opportunity, you know, to have all these family members here and to get them in one big, beautiful group shot." And I go inside. I go, "Oh no." In all the getting prepared for the Irish coffee bar and everything else, I totally spaced out on the picture. Yes, me, the one that's been harping for how many years now to make sure that you get the group shot at a family gathering. Yes, that same person forgets his camera. I didn't bring my backpack. I didn't bring a tripod. I didn't bring anything but Jameson whiskey and Bailey's Irish cream and Pete's coffee. I have to fess up, obviously, right away. And I go, "I forgot the camera. I forgot to bring the camera." And Teresa's going, "What? How could you forget the camera? This is like the biggest opportunity we've had in years." And I go, I know. You're absolutely right. I can't believe I forgot the camera. I'm thinking, okay, I can make this work. So I said, "But don't worry, we will get the shot. And I promise you, it will be good." All right, what do I have with me? I have the iPhone 17 Pro. Now, definitely, I want to be in this shot, right? So this is not going to be where I hold up the iPhone to take a shot of everyone else I'm going to be in the shot too. It's too big a moment. And then I'm kind of looking around to where we can do it. And I scope out a site that I think will work. You know, big L-shaped couch, and we can have some people sitting on the couch and other people standing behind them. The lighting was good. And of course, the good thing about the iPhone is that I have as wide a lens as I need for this shot. Now, I needed some way to support the iPhone since I did not have a tripod or any sort of mount at all. We're looking around the kitchen, looking around, and we find this freestanding picture frame holder that would work great. Fantastic. Now, the good news is that it was somewhat adjustable so that I could, you know, get the iPhone at the right angle for the group shot. And I found a place to set all this up on a TV stand that was opposite the couch. Okay, so that was the good news. The bad news is that it was on a TV stand and I couldn't actually see the screen of the iPhone itself, you know, because I had the, you know, the back camera pointing toward everyone. Going, okay, I know that I can use my watch. Use my watch. So I'm looking at my watch here and I'm looking in the apps for the camera app. I think I used it once way back when, but I haven't looked at this app for a long time. And I haven't, you know, used it with the iPhone 17 at all. So I'm going, hope this works. Pull up the camera app. It connects to my iPhone, which was really good. And not only did it connect to it, it showed me on my watch a picture of the scene so that I could see, so that I could actually compose on my watch, because I, you know, the screen was backed up to the wall in order to make everything fit on this TV stand. So I could compose using my watch. And I'm getting everything kind of lined up and all that sort of stuff. And it's looking pretty good, pretty good. So iPhone is on a picture frame stand, on a TV stand, and I'm composing on my watch. Then I go and join the group, you know, in my spot in the back. You know, tall people are always in the back, right? That's our thing. They get a spot in the back, and I could trigger the phone, of course, with the camera app on my watch, and it gave me a 3-second delay, which is great because, you know, you don't want to be the guy in the shot with your finger pointing to your watch on every frame. So the 3-second thing allows me to hit the trigger and then, you know, do a normal pose and it would take the shot. And it was pretty cool when I hit the self timer on the watch for 3 seconds. We got the flashing light, you know, so that we could tell when it was going to take the picture. It was all quite professional. It was really kind of cool. I did the first couple shots, and then I checked them on the phone. Then, you know, I showed them to kind of everybody that wanted to see to make sure that they looked good to them too. We had to make a couple adjustments in terms of where people were sitting. It was nice to be able to do those adjustments, and then we did it again. So I get it all lined up on the little picture frame on the TV stand, fine-tune the composition with my watch, and then go back, take my place in the back, and trigger it again. And we did another 3 or 4 shots. One of those shots, I thought, turned out really well, and it's the shot that I'm going to run in the show notes. Everyone loves the shot. It looks fantastic. The iPhone did a great job of balancing out the lighting. It was on the picture frame, so at the moment of exposure, it was very steady. So the shot's nice and crisp. 24 megapixels, I believe, that I had. So I've got lots of resolution. I've already shared it with everyone, and they're very happy. Moral of the story is, oh my gosh, aren't we lucky that we live in the time that we do? Because I show up at this probably once in a decade family event. I'm the photographer and I'm totally unprepared to take a shot. And my iPhone and my Apple Watch saved me this particular day. And not only saved me, everyone is thrilled with the outcome and they like the Irish coffees. Moral of the story is that when you have your smartphone in your pocket, whether it's an iPhone or any other brand, Samsung, whatever it happens to be, know how to use those different functions. Your smartphone will save you. I'm going to cover a few news items from the week, and I'm going to start out with a news item from me, and it is, I finally bought the Peak Design Travel Tripod, and I wanted to talk a little bit about it. So during all the sales leading up to Christmas, you know, between Thanksgiving and Christmas, one of the one-day sales at B&H was the Peak Design aluminum tripod. Well, they actually had both of them on sale, I believe, but the aluminum tripod for roughly half price. And it was crazy. The aluminum tripod is normally $399, and it was like something like $207. Now, I had seen this tripod many times because people bring it to our workshops. And so I've seen it, I've played with it, I've talked to people about how much they love it, which is usually a lot, and had always wanted one. But me not being a big tripod guy, last story, perfect example, me not being a big tripod guy, I never figured that it was worth investing $400 for the aluminum version or $600 for the carbon fiber version. And just to refresh, in case you're not up to speed on this Peak tripod that came out a few years ago, it holds up to 20 pounds. It has five leg sections, has a single adjustment locking ring, has aluminum leg locking cams, has a maximum height of 60 inches, a folded length of 15.5 inches, weighs 3.4 pounds, and it's Arca-Swiss plate compatible. Plus, it has a mount for your smartphone that's stored in the center column. They can pull that out, so you can always mount a smartphone on this tripod as well. And it folds up super compact, so compact that on my Low Pro backpack that I talked about a couple weeks ago, it fits in the water bottle holder sleeve on the outside. So it's really, really great travel tripod. At 3.4 pounds, it does feel a little heavy, you know, when you're not used to carrying a tripod. I guess that's what the carbon fiber version's for, but it's not so heavy that I wouldn't bring it. And now I just have it stashed in the car and I take it with me everywhere. Now that I actually had one of these for me, I said, I've got to test this out. I've got to play with it. And I have to say that I really like it a lot. All the materials are very high quality. The leg locking mechanisms are solid and they work very well. I've had some people say that they didn't like the tripod head that it has. You know, the head is unusual. It has a locking ring, and then it has another adjustment so that you can rotate it like a standard ball head. But I found it really, honestly, quite easy to use. All of my cameras that I use regularly, the OM3, the Fujifilm X100V, and the Nikon ZF, they all have grips on them that have Arca plate on the bottom. I just do that because I don't like fiddling around with tripod plates. So they all mount seamlessly on the Peak Design tripod, really quite nice. And it's just a joy to use because it is so compact, because it works so well, and because it feels like such high quality material. It goes up to 60 inches, which is fine for most things that I do. If you ever have an opportunity to get this tripod at a reasonable price, I would highly recommend it. I wish I would have had it years ago, but you know, I just kind of had to wait for the right price. But for what I paid for it, I'm thoroughly pleased with it. And the last thing I wanted to mention is that on B&H, and I have a link to it on B&H, it has 1,182 reviews with an average 5-star rating. So a lot of other people like it as well. The Peak Design aluminum travel tripod, I finally have one. Kodak was the unexpected camera comeback king in 2025. This is an article that's on Digital Camera World, and I have a link to it in the show notes. Once a byword for companies that failed to keep up with the times, Kodak used to be uttered in the same breath as Blockbuster, but not anymore. The comeback king has been revitalizing its fortunes, largely by betting big on its ultra-cheap Pix Pro line of compact cameras. You know, the kind of camera we were all assured was dying out. The company that first made its name with point-and-shoot cameras a century ago is doing so once again. In 2025, Pix Pro was king. These little compacts, many of which can be picked up for two-figure prices, topped the charts again and again, with Kodak's compact camera market share leaving the likes of Fujifilm, Canon, and Ricoh in the dust, particularly in Japan. And with new film stocks being distributed by Eastman Kodak and playful novelty cameras blowing up on Instagram, it's fair to say that Kodak has had its share of successes. Of course, the licensing of Kodak name does mean that we're taking quite a broad brush when we talk about Kodak has done this year, since many of these cameras are made by licensing like JK Imaging and Retro Project. But ultimately, it's Kodak on the boxes and Kodak on the bottom line. So let's take a look back at Kodak in 2025. So now they're going to get in here and they're talking about some of their best sellers, with the ultra-cheap Pix Pro FZ55 and FZ45. Compacts have done massive business in 2024. Kodak would have been crazy not to consolidate and release more of them. Happily, they were not crazy, and July saw the arrival of the budget-friendly Pix Pro C1. Tilted toward content creators with a flip-up screen and full HD video, the Pix Pro C1 also sported some rather fetching retro styling and faux leather trim in a choice of black, brown, or cream. With all these big-selling cameras, you think the days of Kodak financial troubles hitting the headlines would be over, right? Sadly not. Some absolutely eye-watering debt obligations in Eastman Kodak's quarterly filings caused enough of a flutter in the markets that the firm felt the need to release a statement assuring everyone that it wasn't about to go out of business. One can't always predict which cameras will go mega viral and which won't, but with its tiny dimensions, its lo-fi imagery, and its nostalgia-baiting packaging, the Kodak Charmera was probably always going to be a big hit with the Instagram crowd. A tiny box-like keychain camera based on the old Kodak Fling, the Charmera was capable of capturing just 1.6 megapixel photos with a selection of vintage filters and frames to lean into the aesthetic. The first round sold out within minutes, and still today it can be tricky to get a hold of one. New color film stocks are a rare and exciting thing these days, so the unveiling of Kodak Kodacolor 100 and 200 was always going to attract a lot of attention. However, this announcement had even greater significance as it marked the first time that Eastman Kodak would be distributing its own film in more than a decade. Since Kodak's bankruptcy proceedings in 2013, the firm's color film distribution had been exclusively handled by an entirely separate entity, Kodak Alaris. This meant that Kodak was unable to control things like the pricing of its films. While the announcement was a little vague on specifics, the implication seemed to be that Eastman Kodak had managed to claw back at least one of its distribution rights for film. And finally, we close out the year with a delightful surprise, a new 35mm compact camera. The Kodak SnapPic A1 is a fairly simple analog point-and-shoot produced by licensed Retro Project, who were also behind the Charmera. It came sporting a 25mm lens with 3-element glass, as well as double exposure mode and a top plate LCD screen. I actually have it on my desk for review for Digital Camera World as we speak, and I'm thoroughly looking forward to trying it out. This ended a year that could fairly be described as a hot streak for Kodak, making it clear that we'll be seeing lots more releases bearing Kodak brand in 2026. And I, too, am happy about this. I think it's really cool. I'm looking at pictures of the cameras and the other products here in the article. And I'm thinking, You know, it's not the kind of stuff that I would buy or that I would use, but it's the kind of stuff that a lot of people want right now. Compact cameras, cheap compact cameras, very much in vogue again. And Kodak managed to get these cameras to market pretty fast and definitely are satisfying a demand that a lot of consumers want. We all thought that the cheap compact camera was dead and killed by the smartphone, but the thing is, you just never know what people are going to want, and especially when they get tired of, computational photography, pixel perfect photos from smartphones, and they want something that has a little bit more character and a little bit more film-like appearance. And voila, here we go. Kodak steps into the breach and delivers some great products right on. And I would love to see them have a great 2026 as well. Let's take a look at a little Virtual Camera Club news. I want to start out talking about our online workshops. We have one coming up starting on January 8th. January 8th, we have Real World Adobe Lightroom, and this is taught by Rob Knight. And he already has a number of signups for this, but we still have a little bit more room in that class. It's a four-week course led by an Adobe Lightroom expert. Rob is just fantastic with this application. I have seen him in action on workshops. He does a great job, and he's going to be focusing on Classic, but he will also talk about Lightroom Desktop as well, mainly to help participants understand the differences between the two applications. So it starts on January 8th, the 15th, the 22nd, and the 29th. Sessions each week will be at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, so that would be 3 p.m. on the West Coast. Tuition is $165 for the entire month. And if you're an Inner Circle member, you do get your Inner Circle discount. Just use your discount code when signing up. Now, I have a link in the show notes to the workshop, and you can always get to our online workshops by going to either thenimblephotographer.com or thedigitalstory.com and clicking on workshops there. Sign up, get into this Lightroom workshop. You will learn a lot, and you will have a lot of fun with your other participants. And I'm looking forward to sitting in on these myself. I want to give a shout out to our Inner Circle members, the folks that not only get discounts on all of our workshops, but the folks that also contribute to the health of this community month in and month out, both through their pledges and through their contributions on our online site, DerekStoryOnline.com. The Inner Circle members share their ideas. They share their pictures. They just kind of help me understand what's interesting to our community, what's interesting to the folks that listen to the podcast, and it helps me shape the content moving forward. And so Inner Circle members are valuable for all of us, not only because they help us pay the bills, but also because they help us set the agenda for the coming year. We have lots of great stuff coming up in 2026, and the Inner Circle members have a lot to do with that great content. If you're interested in joining the Inner Circle, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of The Digital Story. You can nose around a bit there, sign up, and the next thing you know, you'll be getting mail from me, getting you into our Inner Circle site and sharing the benefits with you. And a big thanks to our Inner Circle members for supporting this podcast. And finally, a tip of the hat to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of The Digital Story. I hope you did some printing this holiday season. And if you did, and if you ran low on paper stock, now is a great time to refuel your stock so that you're ready to go for the next printing session that comes up. It's been fun talking to people who have done prints or receiving cards from folks that have done their own printing. I even received a calendar from Harry. I have all sorts of good stuff. Printing just brings our artwork to life. If you want to learn more about printing And if you want to get some of the finest printing paper available, all you have to do is click on the tile that's on all the pages of the digital story, the Red River paper tile, refuel your paper stock, and get ready to be able to print on a moment's notice. And a big thanks to our friends at Red River for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'm working on more great stuff for the new year. Until then, get out there, take some pictures. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.